protection that they will have diverse sources. In contrast, the markets where all remaining cross-media protections have been entirely lifted represents 72.5% of the population, three-quarters of the population of this country. While I agree that some consolidation may be warranted in the very top markets, the leap from protecting 100% of the population with full protections to less than 3% is pretty dramatic. We're moving to a world where in larger markets, one owner can combine the cable system, three television stations, eight radio stations, the dominant newspaper, the leading internet provider, not to mention cable networks, magazine publishers, and programming studios, which could produce the vast bulk of programming available over all of those outlets. In my view, it's no exaggeration to say these rules will permit the emergence of a 21st century Citizen Kane on the local level, and maybe a handful of them on the national level. In smaller markets, say the town of Great Falls, Montana, with a population of about 56,000 people, under our new rules, one entity can control the cable company, the dominant television station, the dominant newspaper, and multiple radio stations. Is that safe for democracy? We've heard that relaxing the rules is appropriate because so many Americans can now access so many channels, the internet, and other new media. But it turns out the same few vertically integrated global media firms own the bulk of what people see. Ownership has become more concentrated despite the proliferation of options. You know, a person can always add more electrical outlets throughout their house, but that doesn't mean they'll get their electricity from different sources. The same goes for media outlets. And we can't ignore that many citizens have no access to these wonderful new options. Till every American can effectively access these outlets, this commission should protect the diversity available in the outlets that serve their needs. So our task should be to encourage the maximum diversity, not to assure a four-voice or six-voice slice of it. This decision, to the contrary, concludes that there's plenty of diversity already, so we can afford to sacrifice some and have enough left over. I'm afraid when this full document is made public at long last, I expect it will be torn apart by media experts, academics, consumer groups, activists, and most of all, the American people. They'll find it riddled with contradictions, inconsistencies, false assumptions, and outcome-driven thinking. I'd like to recount some of the most glaring inconsistencies and flawed reasoning behind the new rules. I've got a much longer written critique, which I'll release soon, but I'll spare you that by just summarizing some of the thoughts right now. And perhaps the order's most inexplicable inconsistency, as Commissioner Copps noted, the majority decides to retain the 50% discount for UHF stations in the national television cap, yet fails to apply comparable treatment to local television, to the local television rule and cross-media limits. To discount some stations for one rule, while failing to do so in others, is arbitrary and it just can't be justified. If the purpose of this exercise is to update our rules in light of technological developments and progress, we can't just ignore some because we don't like the outcome that it produces more stringent limits. And perhaps the most blatant evidence of a results-driven process, the majority goes out of its way to allow companies to seek waivers of the bright line rules to achieve greater concentration while it attempts to deny the statutory right of opponents of mergers to petition to deny a given transaction. It's fundamentally unfair to allow waivers for corporate interests in extenuating circumstances without the corresponding protections for the public. Now, the diversity index was a noble effort that tragically degenerated into an ill-conceived rote formula that even Merlin couldn't decipher. The index is seemingly nothing more than economic jiu-jitsu, an ornate castle built on a foundation of sand at the ocean's edge. After detailing at length the new formula and its underpinnings, the majority stresses that the index is used only as a basis to draw bright-line rules. But the order specifically denies any person the right to apply this magical new formula to a particular market. In other words, no one can use the FCC's own new methodology, which is supposedly so exciting, to show that an application in a particular market harms the public interest. Among its many flaws, the index distorts how it calculates the market shares of relevant providers in each local market, resulting in grossly understated measurements of the impact of any particular combination. For example, in New York, it treats the shop-at-home TV station the same as the local NBC station. Similarly, with respect to newspapers, the index treats the New York Times the same as the Polish Daily News. Despite the quest for empirical footing, the index is premised on admittedly incomplete data. Recognizing that the Nielsen study failed to ask specific questions of the source of local news, the majority marches ahead, cobbling its own data points on local news sources from selective answers to muddled questions. Against all notions of consistency, The majority unwisely decides that even if a broadcaster is restricted from acquiring a newspaper, the broadcaster can still buy the paper and hold it until its next renewal period, a period of up to 8 years. This simply underscores the outcome-driven nature of this order. Now, on the radio front, which is, I think, one of the brighter fronts on this otherwise dark landscape, the retention of some local radio rules appears an acknowledgement by the majority that they couldn't stomach fallout from the rapid consolidation of the last 7 years. And some real improvements were made in the market definitions. Yet for all the talk about tightening the rules, in several important respects, the order actually further unleashes the industry. It eliminates the radio TV cross-ownership rule. In a something that we really need to look at carefully, it eliminates the current limit on the audience or advertising share any one owner can gain through mergers in a local market. For a rule designed solely to address competitive effects of mergers, it's mystifying why this order would cast aside such a fundamental and economically sound principle as accounting for the market power of combined stations. The revised rule now clears the way for mergers that previously were denied or designated for hearing due to the strong likelihood of negative competitive effects. Now they've got the green light to go ahead. This order does include a helpful provision that allows small businesses, at least initially, to buy grandfathered groups of radio clusters that no longer comply with the new market definition. While useful, I'm afraid it won't get used very much. Small businesses will encounter great difficulty in raising the capital needed to buy these expensive large clusters, even if they ever come on the market at all. This is especially true given that the seller could peel off one or two stations and then sell both the remaining cluster and the spin-off stations with no restrictions to an unlimited pool of potential buyers, which will limit the exclusivity of the eligible entity buyer pool and raise the price beyond their reach in many cases. In my view, adding this admittedly helpful provision that potentially affects only a handful of stations if it ever gets used at all doesn't come close to offsetting the broader damage done by this order to the future of minorities and women in broadcasting. The sad truth is that small businesses, including those owned by minorities and women, are going to find it even harder in more concentrated and expensive media markets to raise capital, to own outlets, or to have their own unique voices heard. Most alarming is that after only 2 years, the small business can flip the grandfathered cluster to any large radio media conglomerate like Clear Channel. I recommend it against this. Making this approach so ripe for abuse further diminishes the likelihood that it will serve much of a useful purpose, since the real disadvantaged businesses will have to bid against companies that plan to sell to well-capitalized radio giants, again raising the price of those clusters and setting them out of reach of the real people that we're trying to help. So the ultimate beneficiaries of this approach could be companies like Clear Channel that could add even more grandfathered clusters than it currently controls. So today, the Commission introduces another new behemoth into our media landscape, the TV triopoly. Where's the empirical evidence supporting this creation in our record? As unjustified by evidence as it may be, at least this leap is only six of the top TV markets. Much more troubling, even, is the leap in the number of duopolies now permitted. Duopolies are now restricted to a few sizable markets. But this order expands duopolies to 162 out of 210 markets. That means it expands it to 95% of the American population. I can't fathom why we'd allow such dramatic consolidation across the board with no analysis as to how this will impact individual markets. It's breathtaking, this assumption, that each of these mergers, all of which will eliminate a local voice, are in the public interest. And I just don't believe the record justifies it. I do believe the record demonstrates that further concentration of power in the hands of networks justifies retention of the national network cap at the 35% level set by Congress. The majority has not adequately justified this arbitrary selection of the new 45% cap. They rely exclusively on evidence showing that largest network station owners possess no greater bargaining power measured by primetime preemptions than the smallest network station. This is a thin reed on which to justify a 10-point increase. Moreover, without access to more data, this conclusion is totally unconvincing. In the end, another trade-off between efficiencies and public interest goals like localism. Guess which one wins? Social benefits of locally originated and oriented programming and program selection, to me, outweigh the efficiencies of further vertical integration. Finally, let me explain why I can't join the majority in voting for the retention of the dual network rule, even though I believe it serves a very useful function. I just disagree with the order's conclusion that diversity no longer underpins the rule. But more importantly, I think a more rigorous examination of this rule has got to be conducted in light of the rising tide of Spanish language broadcast networks. We talk about changes in the marketplace. This is a big one. Just as the rule is retained for the top four English language networks, so too should Spanish broadcasting be examined separately. The rapid growth of the Spanish language media in the past several years is having a significant effect on the landscape in which broadcast networks operate. I believe these developments require us to consider whether to afford Spanish speakers the same protections available to English-speaking television audiences. But again, the concerns of this important, growing minority community have been overlooked in this proceeding. Looking back on how we got here, I'm convinced that there's little else I could have done to change the outcome. In an effort to moderate the extreme proposals that emerged, I offered suggestions to my colleagues which unfortunately were not incorporated. The turning point when I realized I couldn't likely support this proposal was when the majority settled on the notion that bright-line rules were preferable to making case-by-case determinations as to whether mergers served the public interest. The Supreme Court has said that, quote, promoting the widespread dissemination of information from a multiplicity of sources, end quote, is of the highest order. So safeguarding diversity should not be subject to abstract diversity scenarios or arbitrary decisions that reduce the number of voices people can hear. I don't mean to suggest that bigness is always bad or that free enterprise will always fail the public. Free enterprise serves the public so well in so many ways and is why we have such a wonderful proliferation of outlets and ideas floating through the airwaves today. There's nothing inherently wrong with earning profits from using public property. But when it comes to gaining even greater profits at the expense of the cornerstones of our democracy, we've got to carefully question the effects on the public. Today's rules just don't let the big get bigger. They'll effectively prevent smaller entities from ever breaking in. I would have relaxed the rules more incrementally and shown the public each time how they'd benefit. Since my arrival here 5 years ago, I've approached this proceeding with a constructive frame of mind. I sought to understand the various proposals and their underpinnings and offer my views on their efficacy. Even after others closed in on an approach which I could not get comfortable with, I made reasonable attempts to moderate the proposals which were denied. In the end, it wasn't the process that precluded me from participating in drafting and supporting today's order. It was the substantive direction the item took and the results-driven imposition of bottom-line, bright-line rules ahead of all else. I'm disappointed that a majority of my colleagues could not be persuaded to take a more reasoned, conservative, case-by-case approach. But this is far from over. Congress may prove more responsive to the citizens who passionately plead for the independence of the diversity of their media. To paraphrase Winston Churchill, this is not the end or even the beginning of the end, but just the end of the beginning. Thank you.
Thank you, Commissioner Adelstein. Those commissioners voting in favor of the item signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Those opposed signify.
The item is adopted. Thank you. This meeting is adjourned.
Regulation of the mass communication is the end of democracy. Mass deregulation of the mass communication is the end of democracy.